This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're going to be talking about the top cards from Lorwyn Eclipsed. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander, and the full Lorwyn Eclipse spoiler is out. The set looks absolutely amazing, and today we're going to talk about the best cards from the entire set for Commander. And joining me to do this, of course, is the crew, Krim, Tomer, Phil. How's it going today, guys?
Pretty excited.
So, this is the set for me for this year. We're getting the best out of the way.
Yeah,
and I'm so
beginning of January.
Yeah, I'm a little scared, but I'm a little happy right now. I'm happy and scared.
Yeah,
that's gonna be fine. I think the other two are cool as well.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is gonna
Just give me like 3 weeks of Lorwyn. Let me soak in the vibes. No New York for like 3 weeks.
No New York before pre-release, at least.
Give me this.
So yes, that's a podcast for today. We got a huge list of good cards from the set that we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGOldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service fee to send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more, and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast pin once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, y'all talked about some Commander New Year's resolutions, and our top comment comes from Zero Excalibur, says, "I can't wait for Seth to watch this and suddenly win with Ink Shield out of spite." And I gotta say, I didn't watch this podcast, and then we recorded a Commander Clash episode, and y'all were like, everyone was playing Ink Shield and talking about Ink Shields, and it was all good. I was like, what is happening? Why is everyone all of a sudden playing Ink Shields and trying to win with Ink Shields? So I think I'm going to have to go back and watch this podcast because I'm very confused.
Don't worry about it.
It's fine.
It's not going to happen, though.
Was this a get Seth with Ink Shield? Was that your New Year's resolution? Are y'all just trying to get me? Oh, my goodness. Anyway.
What would be really that specific?
I think you might.
Anyway,
Ink Shield is not from Lorwyn Eclipsed, and we have a ton of cool cards that are from Lorwyn Eclipsed. And like usual, we're going to go around and talk about what we think are the best cards and our favorite cards. But before we start going around, I did want to mention, Lorwyn Eclipsed is kind of a unique set because it's a tribal set. So a big theme of this set is creature type matters, right? You got fairies, you got elves, you got Kifkin, you got giants. You have 10 different creature types altogether, some more supported than others. And the thing I want to mention is, there's a lot of cards in this set that I really like and I think are really good. And like Champion of the Path, I think is an insane card if you are an elemental deck. It deals damage whenever an elemental comes into play equal to its power to each opponent. Seems so good in elementals, but it probably isn't going to make our list because unless you're playing elementals, you're never going to play that card. So just because one of these creature type matters cards doesn't get mentioned today doesn't mean it's bad. It's probably still very good in its archetype. But anyway, let's talk some Lorwyn Eclipsed, and let's start with Phil. Let's kick it off with you. Give us a Lorwyn Eclipsed card that's good.
All right, I'm gonna take. We talked about this before, and we have it on this list 3 times. So I'm just gonna say it right away. Mm-hmm. Mutable Explorer. This was spoiled early, and I mentioned my hype about this card early, but now we can finally play with it. It is 3 mana, changeling, so all creature type 1/1. And when it enters, you create a tapped Mutavault token. That is the, I think, second way to make a land token now on a creature on ETB. And that is very abusable. And that is also, there's no token limit. So you can finally get actual infinite mana. And I already play this combo. I made it short about it and stuff. If you play Springheart Nantuku at this and stuff, you can literally get infinite lands and landfall triggers and Mutavolt. It's a, I guess Toma will probably talk about the changeling part, but I'm just interested in creating tokens, copying these tokens, drawing cards from them.
It so triggers much. Caretaker's talent. Of course Phil loves it. Wait, Tomer, do you play this in your changeling deck then? Is that why you're hyped for it?
I mean, I think like I haven't had so many upgrades for the changeling deck in a single set. And it's my favorite deck of all time. So I'm like, I'm already like, if Lorwyn Eclipse only gave me changelings, like the handful of changelings, and that's it, I would already have been like, best set of the year. 10 out of 10, no notes. But like, yeah, this is the strongest of the changelings in the set. This is the single strongest one. It's just good in general. It's just like a wood elves that drops a Mutavolt, and it's really cool. But then it's also a changeling, and also the Mutavolt can turn into a changeling. Insane. Uh-huh. Insane. Great. Love it.
What do you think on
it
this
is
one,
tapped,
Grim?
So it's not... I think wood elves... It's better, right? Sorry to intimidate
like here.
Wood elves is still the generic.
I mean,
better
wood elves is untapped. Mutavolt's better than
the forest. Can't turn into a changeling. Come on.
But where are you at, Grim?
I mean, I've started to also throw it into my decks, right? Like I've been playing. I'm playing it in my Venom deck, and it doesn't. I don't even care about the changeling type, right? I just like having a Mutavolt as a land. It's much better than getting a forest, and I do play Overlord of the Hauntwoods. I've been jamming as many of these new like three drop creatures that can kind of spawn a land token. So I'll keep welcoming them. This is our second one, and I think this card is very good.
I think y'all are right, but you're also bearing the lead on this card, which is, yes, it's good in changelings. Yes, it's good in fill decks, but it also means you don't got to play basic lands. This is another ramp spell that says you don't need to play basic lands in your deck. Between this, we got the three drop flag. We got Overlord that makes it everywhere land. We got the stuff that ramps out forests, which works like Nature's Lord, three visits. There's now a full ramp package that you can play like the one forest mono green deck if you want to. And I am all about that because I'm not a big fan of basic land, so I love this card too. The card's just, it's so good all around. Well, let's move on to Krim. Krim, what do you got for us that's good from Lorwyn Eclipsed?
Okay. I think I'll just start us off with Mirror Mind Crown. I think I might be the only person high on this card, but this card just
Phil's
seems
right there.
Like, yeah. But Phil doesn't seem to like it. I mean, I have it on my list, so I think it's an interesting one. Having to pay four mana to play it and then two to equip it, as long as the equipment is attached to a creature, the first time you would create one or more tokens each turn, you may instead create that many tokens that are copies of the equipped creature. I think this is super sweet. Right, with how easy we can make tokens, and like obviously there's the shells that this is. I've already included it into like my fairies decks because being able to equip it to like a Spellstunner Sprite, meaning that, and then in an Alayla deck where I cast on your turn entirely, that means I'm just gonna counter you forever, right? Like
that is miserable Krim thing to do with such a fun card. All the Spellstunner Sprites, you never resolve anything.
Tomer, there's no way you're gonna
shake
your
board.
Head at that.
I'm on board.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, somebody at least has to back me up here, right? But yeah, like it is really fun being able to just make so many tokens nowadays, and then if you're able to like then turn those tokens instead of like a treasure, a food, a clue into like maybe one of your best non-legendary creatures, or if it's legendary, who cares, as long as you get the ETB, right? So I think this has a lot of applications, and on top of that, let's not forget that that's Ron Spencer or Dan Frazier art.
I know, so good. Yeah. I mean, are you not putting this on an Academy Manufacturer? Like, what even happens?
So
does the game
just
explode?
I have a deck where I play E6 and Moonlit Meditation to do exactly this with the two Tender Shoot Dryads and stuff like... Anyway, Tender Shoot Dryads are probably the best ones for this because every turn they clone themselves and then these kids... Whatever. Six mana to get there, though. And I feel like with Moonlit Meditation, that's three and it's an aura that does the same. It feels like if you get away with it, it's already devastating, so you don't need the, they removed it, pay two again. So I think paying half the mana up front And if you get blown out, whatever. But
this gives you the resilience, right? Isn't that all the difference in a multiplayer game?
Yeah, but my deck's crazy resilient anyways. I'm just going to draw 10 more cards and do something else. I feel like this might be too all in on the plan. Although, to be fair, that's not my main plan. And I kind of just play Moonlit Meditation because it was my promo and I thought, well, now I got to play it. Is the effect too clunky? Maybe I'm not playing it in the right decks. So far, every time I played it, it was crazy, but I got away with it. And I think I'd rather pay half and risk it. Although this card, maybe I would just try it.
I think here's the big upside that we didn't really talk about, which is it's colorless. I think like Moonlight Meditation is better if you're blue, right? It's just a cheaper version of the fact, it's not repeatable. If I'm in a blue deck, I'd play Moonlight Meditation over Mirror Mind Ground, but you can't play Moonlight Meditation in like Cranko or something that just makes so many tokens or Lathril. So there's like some of these commanders that are really good at making tokens that just are the wrong colors for Moonlight Meditation. And that's where I'm most excited about this card, where if you have a commander that's just really good at pooping out a bunch of tokens, this card's going to do some ridiculous things.
Yep.
It also might be better in artifact decks because it's an artifact, so it'll be easier to search up when you want to do these things. And a lot of artifact decks have cost reductions to casting artifacts. Like there's like a 3-drop, 3/2 creature that just says like artifact spells cost one less. There's Joyrus Familiar, historic spells cost one less. So if you're just like super heavy on artifacts, this might just be better in that regard too.
Yeah.
And artifacts flip out tokens, right? Like that's their thing.
I know you're talking about Moonlight Meditation, but like even then, that being a one-off aura, this is just gonna stay even if you remove my creature.
If your commander makes tokens. So, I totally agree there.
That's true.
If your plan is attach this to my commander, the resilience is definitely, for me, the Moonlit Meditation is just like a little fun gimmick to do in this deck. But I think if you play, in Cranko, I didn't even think about this, but you just win if you clone something.
Wait, Cranko, but it's that many of the... No, it's not Cranko.
You put this on a lot and then tap Cranko. Oh.
No, you don't put it on Cranko. You tap Cranko to make like a ton of tokens at once.
A ton of Goblin Kings.
Goblin, whatever, the ones that give like +1/+1 and such.
Ooh. Goblin Ringleader, you draw some cards.
Oh, my God.
Or Muxus.
I think the card is
Spell Stutter Spray.
I think the Spell Stutter Spray is just funny.
It is funny and very crib. Well, let's move on to Tomer. Tomer, what do you got for your first card?
Okay, this one might be a little bit of a curveball, but I am so enamored with it, and I think it's actually very strong. This is Oft-Nabbed Goat. It's a 2-mana black 0/5 goat creature. It's you could pay 1 mana, pay 1 generic mana, draw a card, gain control of this creature, and put a -1/-1 counter on it. Only your opponents may activate this ability, and only as a sorcery. When this creature dies, if it had 1 or more -1/-1 counters on it, its owner draws that many cards, and each other player loses that much life. So this is peak Commander vibes for me. This is what I love about Commander. It's a made for multiplayer card because it's in one of the precons. It's a Jun -1/-1 kind of precon. You drop this on the board for 2 mana. Then your opponents are obviously going to want to draw cards, right? What's better to do? So they're going to be paying the 1. They're going to be stealing it, drawing a card. You can steal it back if you want to, but you could just let your opponents have fun with it. I would bet in like 1 turn cycle, this goat dies. And when it dies, you, the owner of it, draw 5 cards and drain everybody or ping everybody for 5. And that was a 2-mana investment. It's hilarious. And then, yes, if you have like -1/-1 counter synergies and stuff, this really pops off. There's a new Reaper King that, like, if a creature your opponents control die with a -1/-1 counter on it, it comes back to your side of the battlefield. You gain control of it. So that's hilarious with the goat. But, like, I think you could just, like, if you're in a random black deck, you just put this goat in your deck and you'll just think of it as like a 2-mana. I'm going to draw X amount of cards and ping my opponents, and I could draw more cards off it too.
Interesting.
It's a goat.
I want to see this play out. So if nobody does anything and you I mean, obviously with synergies, if you can put them counters on there. But
yeah,
you just have an 0-5 if nobody takes the bait. It's probably... I don't know.
I'm on the pick. Nobody's gonna take the bait.
Here's my issue. Someone will take the bait because I'll take the bait. Like I will definitely be paying to draw a card for this. But my concern is only your opponents can activate it, and you can only do it as a sorcery. So I think it's gonna be kind of slow. Like you play this, someone else has to wait to their turn to activate it. Once they activate it, they get it, and then they can't activate it because now they're the person who controls it. So then you got to wait till someone else's turn and hope they activate it. So I do think it'll probably end up drawing you 5 cards, right? But it's going to draw you 5 cards over the course of, like, I don't know. It's going to take several turns probably to get there. Am I misreading this card?
Wait, will you? Because, so... it's sorcery speed, but, like, your opponents can do it. So, like, let's say I play it. Then, at sorcery speed, you can still just take it, right? On my turn? No?
Oh, can I do it? Because I read it as...
only opponents can do this, right?
Okay, draw a card.
Yes. Oh, no, they have to wait creature. Until their turn. They have to wait until their turn.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. They have to wait until... But then, okay, so I play it, and then the next person, I pass it to Seth. And then Seth can steal it.
I can pay one and take it during my turn, and then during Prim's turn, he can pay one and take it, or Phil's turn, he can pay one and take it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you pay
the
one.
I think that's how it'll probably play out.
Yeah, I mean, I think people will. Like, pay one, draw a card is good value, so I think you will eventually draw 5 out of it. The other thing is, in a Blight deck, this card's wild, right? Because then you don't even have to, like, give it away. You can just, like, put 5 counters on it, draw 5 cards, and that's what your deck wanted to be doing anyway. So I think worst case that, but it's just, like, so fun. It's kind of like Humble Defector-y, but I like that it benefits its controller, in theory, the most in the long run, when Humble Defector doesn't always do that.
I think I'm just going to try jamming it on decks, even outside of Blight, and just see if it's any good, because it's funny.
It's going to be fun.
It seems like a fun mini game. Yeah. Right. It's a funny little mini game.
That's a cool card. Well, let's move on. And I'm going to start with the boringest card, but I got to get your guys' opinion on this, because this is the freak out card. And this is a card, if we're talking about the top cards from Lorwyn Eclipse, I think most Commander players would name this card just based on what I've seen on social media. And it's a new red 2 drop in Hexing Squelcher. So Hexing Squelcher, it's a 2-mana 2/2. It's a goblin sorcerer. It says it can't be countered. Your other spells can be countered. It has Ward 2. Other creatures you control have Ward 2. And as soon as this card was spoiled, there was the great CDH freakout. So many people were like, you shouldn't have printed this card. It's busted. It's going to ruin the format. I'm curious what you guys think of this card. So I think for the kind of commander that we play, like relatively high-powered casual. So I'm not talking about CDH. I don't know. Maybe it does break CDH for all I know. But for what we play, I think it's good in a goblin deck for sure. Like making your stuff uncounterable is nice. I would think about it in like a combo deck, I guess, if I'm just trying to resolve like some really important thing. I can do the like Grand Abolisher trick or Voice of Victory trick where you drop this and then try to play your big thing and force it through. But I don't really know if this card is like that. I don't know. Would you spend $50 on this card to play it at our power level? Because I'm kind of thinking this card might be a little bit overrated, even though I do think it's good in those homes. But what do you guys think of Hexing Squelcher?
I just want to clarify this. It's just Ward pay 2 life. You don't have to pay 2 mana. You just have to pay 2 life.
It's 2 life. So, maybe I misspoke there. It's life. Yeah, yeah. It's a bad ward.
If it were Ward pay 2, it might have actually been
a little bit concerned.
This card is a very cool $50 bear. It's a 2/2 vanilla bear in casual commander, right? Like maybe you hose the crims of the world where they're like, haha, I brought my 10 counterspell deck. Well, that's still only 10 of my cards, right? That doesn't do anything else. You are playing a 2/2 and in a casual format where like in CDH, it makes sense. You know, you're trying to push through this game plan, like a demonic consultation. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But like in casual, dude, I'm just happy to like, I'm just happy to be here, so I am not pushing any one game plan through, right? So I think this kind of doesn't really do much for me, and it's really just all the hype for the CDH and like maybe whatever other
legacy or vintage
formats.
You gotta help me. Is it the fact that it can't get countered that's the problem?
And it's not all players' spells. It's only your opponents.
Yeah, because they had Spider-Punk that like kind of did the same thing, but it was symmetrical. This time it only does it for you. So essentially, if you want to combo off, you can play this and they can't counter it. And then you can play your combo pieces and they can't counter it, essentially.
So I got a list here. There's a bunch of cards that do this, I guess, for I think we're talking about CDH here, right? Otherwise, it's just of whatever. Allosaurus Shepherd can't be countered, and green spells can be countered for one mana.
That is a good one.
A good one. And then, Destiny Spinner makes creatures and enchantments, but it can be countered. Frenzied Bailoff, if it's only creatures, I guess, that you can make.
It's incomparable. It is the best. Like Allosaurus Shepherd, for example, it's like, well, it's only your green spells.
It's only green,
and you also have to be playing green. And, like, the strongest CDH decks are usually, like, red-based or, like, Grixis. I think it's, like, still, like, Sylvis and what's-his-face, the kobold, is still, like, the best. So, like, it applies to all spells. So it's just the best one, and it doesn't turn off your own. You aren't affected by it. You can still counter your opponent's stuff. So it's just, like, you play this when you want to go and win the game, and CDH is just about just like trying to jam the I win spell immediately, you know, like, so you just play this on the turn that you want to win, or you could play it ahead of time too. And there's just less kill spells too. Like most of the interaction is just like counter magic and whatnot. So like, this is very effective against that. But like,
wait, are we telling CDH players to play more removal? Is that?
No, I'm not saying that. I don't think, change your entire deck building strategy based on a single card. No, but it's just like, it is going to be much more powerful there. And, but like where I play is like I play mostly bracket 3 and also like bracket 2. And it's just like, I don't know if maybe it's my bubble or anything, but like combo still has a negative reputation, you know, like you're just not winning with these type of strategies that much that you would show up so much in CDH. It's more about just like accumulating a snowball. And this is just not very interesting in that regard. Bore wipes happen a lot more also at lower settings. And if you're winning a lot slower and bore wipes are more common, then just dropping like this random 2-drop is just like, it's fine, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of anticlimactic. If you like only for CDH from what I know about it, it's like, if you can counter this and afterwards you can counter anything, and then you Thoracle. But isn't that what the format does? I don't know. You play one card that says, it turns out it's kind of anticlimactic at times.
And then also just flat out useless, I think, in like actual, right?
It's just a 2/2.
Like that is a $50 2/2.
And Ward pay 2 life is like not a meaningful 40 life commander. You start at 40 life. That's nothing. I'll take the 2 to kill your thing if I have to. So all this to say, the card is, I think, a good card, but if you're playing the Commander Clash power level, I would not probably run out and spend $50 on it. I'd probably wait a little bit because it's just, I don't think it's going to add that much to your Goblin deck or whatever.
Well, let's go hold back on. I think that it will also not hold this price. Yeah. This card will plummet. You're talking about the first big set. Everyone's coming back.
And it's a rare.
It's a rare. Everyone's going to be opening this set. There's no world where this card is still $50, like in 3 weeks. Like it would have to be the Pro Tour All-Star
even that's pretty questionable. We weren't even convinced this was a good standard card when we did the Goldfish podcast. So, or that good of a standard card.
Maybe
so,
it's good in Legacy. I don't know, but Modern,
but Legacy
you can
doesn't
play it
drive.
I know red has in Modern red storm, like the Ral Zeric deck.
Yeah, Ruby
the,
Storm.
The flip thing is like still decent, but like even that, like there's so much spot removal in Modern that I don't even know if that's going to be any decent. So I don't know.
I would hold off. I also think the price, like being a rare, it just seems ridiculous that its price could be $50. I think it'll still be one of the more valuable rares in the set, but I would hold off a little bit on this one. But let's go back to Phil. Phil, what do you got for pick number 2?
All right. I'm taking one from the Commander decks here, and that is Grave Venerations. Grave Venerations? I think so. Oh, I should have read so the card's cool. name before. It is 4 mana, which is quite a lot, but it has a cool text box that I like on any card. It is, when this enchantment enters, you become the monarch. And then at the beginning of your end step, if you're the monarch, so when you play this at the end step, you will be the monarch, unless something weird happens. Whatever. If you're the monarch, return up to one target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So you play this, become the monarch, so end of turn you draw a card. If people damage you with combat damage, they become the monarch, but first you get a creature from your graveyard to your hand, and then whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. Very good line of text there in the end, because that stacks up a lot over the course of a game. People will attack you, you will chump block, you will get back your chump blockers. I think this is, 4 mana is quite the price for something that doesn't have a huge impact, but I think it will stack up. And if you keep the monarchy for a couple of turns, get back your chump blockers, or I don't know, if you play like Marauding Flashbacks or something, then it gets a little nasty, because I want to try this in Jadar with exactly this and keep edicting the table, so nobody will get the monarchy. Sometimes I'm the bad
or fairies.
Guy. Or fairies.
Or fairies. Dude, like, no joke. Getting your ETBs again from your fairies that die, all the world's difference.
You can get back your spell stutter sprite.
Yeah,
and
you get
all
back
their spell
things.
Stutter sprite.
You can just keep doing it.
Glenalendra Archmage and stuff. But like, yeah, if you can sacrifice something for value and get it back every turn, ooh la la. Format.
Yeah, I mean, The card's great, right? Like, I don't know. It seems just like a very solid card. I would think Sacrifice Tax, because of the Blood Artist Tax, is like one of the most obvious homes for it. But the Monarch's very powerful, and I think it makes games more fun. So I could see playing it in other, like, somewhat graveyardy decks. I don't think you have to be full-on Sephiroth or whatever to play this card. But if you're getting things in and out on the graveyard, it seems just like a fun value enchantment.
It reminds me of, in Commander Legend, I think there was like a court cycle or something. There were enchantments that when it enters, you get the monarchy. And then they had an upkeep trigger. The upkeep trigger was like, it was okay if you didn't have the monarchy. But if you had the monarchy on your upkeep trigger, it got a lot better. And this kind of reminds me of that. But like, the trigger is now on the end step. So you can like, you guarantee to get the recursion the first turn you play it. And then each subsequent turn, you can hit somebody, get the monarchy, and then your end. So it plays a lot better, I think. And then, I feel like it is very strong in Aristocrats. But then also, if you have the evasion to steal the monarchy, like fairies, it's also, I think.
The triggering at the beginning of your end step is very big, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Maybe if you steal it,
much better than upkeep.
Because you could just get it back on your turn.
Same and turn, you can force it a little. Because you get back a creature, you can make uncomfortable attacks and just get back whatever died.
Yep.
Yeah.
Love it.
That card actually seems very good. I like it. Good.
This is very off topic, but I'm enamored by Phil's playing the Lorwyn Eclipse trailer and behind his head. And, oh my God. Can we also say, just very off topic, but like how much does that slap? That trailer with the Jim Henson Company, oh my God, and the music. I've been playing the music while going on the Metro and stuff. Oh my God.
It's probably the best one they've ever done. I'm still a little partial towards the gingerbread cookie one from the original Eldraine. Yeah. I thought was like really good for its time, but this one is probably even better than that. Yeah,
go watch it.
War of the Spark was also really good. Yeah.
War of the Spark was really good for me still.
War of the Spark, yes, that one was more dramatic though and heart-wrenching. But I like the lighter flavor of some of the other ones. But that one was like the best serious one I think they've ever done. Well, let's keep moving on to Krim. Krim, back to you. What do you got for us? What works with Spellstutter Sprite this time?
Well, funny enough, there are fairies on the card. I want to talk about Dream Harvest.
Yes.
So that's 5 and 2 Dimir Hybrid Sorcery. Each opponent exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile until they have exiled cards with a total of mana value 5 or greater this way. Until end of turn, you may cast cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost. This is heat. Like, this card is wild.
This getting is Italia to exile... home, and it's so good.
I think it's better than Italy.
Way better Italy trigger.
Is it better than Italy trigger?
The trigger is better. You don't get a body.
Yeah, but it's not
the
trigger. Yeah.
Right. You don't know how many regrowths I hit with Italy. It is.
Yeah. It goes past, like, oh, if I hit, like, cultivate, right? So, okay, cool. You have to keep going. Right? Like, whereas like, Itali, if you hit cultivate, that's it. That's the hit from your opponents. So,
yeah, so
this
maybe
can
we
keep going.
People kind of misread this. I've seen posts about it saying, like, oh, this only gets you 5 mana value or something. So if they hit up to a 4 drop or you hit it,
yeah,
you do it again. Mm-hmm. So at least you get a 5 drop or more. But then, yeah, if you get a 1-4 drop, then you get it again. Imagine hitting Uzo or something and then getting another spin from the artifact deck.
Yep.
Oh, man. Kind of sucks that it's hard to resolve on spell table, especially. So not sure how.
Well, actually, no,
I'm not
going
to play it as
really...
much as I want.
It's kind of like pretty.
At least it's
off
a one shot.
It is a one shot mostly.
There are worse cards in the set for spell table.
One of them I love so much. I think this sorcery is just so strong. And then getting to play it there up until the end of the turn. Oh, man. This is just a haymaker. This is another 7 mana sorcery that I am just in love with. This Breach the Multiverse, yo, they're packing them. You know, they're bringing those sweet 7 mana sorceries that I love playing. And on top of that, the artwork is just beautiful. Seeing all the fairies kind of just like swarming the target there in the art. So
Dream Harvest also very cool name. Super.
Yeah, Dream Harvest is a good name. I mean, this card's very good. I think if they do change the hybrid rule, then this card becomes even better, because I think the only thing that's like slightly holding it back is being in two colors, because I think you would play this in mono blue, you play it in mono black. I think of it a lot like...
Known Demir hater, Seth. I can't believe you would say this to me.
Its
biggest drawback is that it's in Demir.
It's drawback that it's multicolor.
It's just two colors. It's two colors. Yeah,
that's special decks. I don't know.
Well, but like, it kind of reminds me a little of Flotsam and Jetsam. I guess that's three colors, but that card's like super busted, but you don't see it that much just because of the color identity. But all this to say, yes, I think Itali is a good comparison. It also reminds me a little Breach the Multiverse. Is this just like 7 mana thing that you can play in your Demir deck, and you're going to get something from all your opponents? It's going to be this huge splashy effect. So I think we'll see a ton of this card. I think you don't really need to have any synergies for it, right? You can just jam this in any card that's in its colors, and this can be one of your finishers, and it's going to be worth it if you can cast it.
You'll have to work through the fact that you're in Demir, though. You know, like,
yeah,
I know you.
That's
I remember the podcast. All right, y'all hated on Demir, and I just remember all y'all hated on Demir. Okay, so I'm just saying, I remember these things.
Yeah, Krim has a little Demir hater scorecard. He keeps track. This about Demir that episode.
This is the first one I'm dream harvesting. I guess he hit everybody with this one, but so
that is a good one. Tomer, let's go back to you. What do you got for your next choice?
Ooh, okay. So I have one that is a cool callback to a mechanic that I quite enjoyed from the original Lorwyn block. It is Raiding Schemes. So Raiding Schemes is a 5 mana gruel enchantment, 3 red green enchantment that says each non-creature spell you cast has conspire. So as you cast a non-creature spell, you may tap 2 untapped creatures you control to share a color with it. When you do, you copy it and you may choose new targets for the copy. A copy of a permanent spell becomes a token. Now, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of non-creature heavy archetypes happen to make creature tokens as just a byproduct. Like, let's say you're Enchantress, for example, you might have like a lot of random permanents on the board that like Archon of something that make pick a Psy when you're putting enchantments on the battlefield, or like Sigil of the Empty Throne when you're casting enchantments, you make 4/4 angels. There's a whole bunch. And then like if you're, let's say, Spellslinger, there's like a bajillion Young Pyromancer effects that do the same thing, where they just poop out creatures like Red Elementals for Young Pyromancer Tauren and makes Blue Drakes. And then if you're an artifact, the bajillion of them, they're usually colorless, so that one's a little bit worse. But anyway, so you do that. You're like Enchantress, and you have a lot of token makers, or you're Spellslinger, you have a lot of token makers. You drop down Raiding Schemes, and you just cast more things. But now you double all of them because you have all these tokens laying around and they're colors. So you just tap the ones that are the same colors and you get double. And it's so good. Or you're like cascading, and each spell you're cascading is also a cast, so you can also conspire all of them. It's this card is silly. This card is very silly, and I'm very excited for it.
I mean, you played in the Grohl Toph spell slinger deck if you wanted, right? Like that'd be fun.
And then you start using the Earthbended. Lands, they're not each color. They're not in a color though, right?
Ooh, no. the lands are not. So the
you have to make them a color first.
But
that's the whole thing. Annoying thing with artifacts is most of the artifact token producers are colorless, so it's not as good there. But like Enchantress, they're always colored tokens. Spellslinger, they're usually colored tokens. So you just woof, just there.
Yeah,
just,
I think the good thing to point out there is that it's non-creature spell, because there are a lot of enchantments that are good in Spellslinger decks, like Double Visions and Thousand Year Storm, but they are not instant sorceries. They synergize with nothing. They usually do nothing when they enter. This one can copy non-creature spells, which seems like the very noticeable exception here, because in Enchantress, it's crazy, right? You can.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Enchantresses that make tokens. And
so many.
Yeah, yeah, so for Enchantress, many. This seems insane.
Yeah, artifacts, enchantments. The fact that we have a lot of things that copy instants and sorceries. We've had these going back to Mirari or whatever 25 years ago. Like, it's always been a part of the game. This is still fine copying instants and sorceries. I think it's still, in some ways, one of the better ones, since it doesn't actually cost mana and it's not capped like once per turn like some of them are. So I think that it's still very good there. But the fact that it works with any non-creature spell really puts this over the top. It's Wart, right? It's essentially Wart's ability, Wart the Raid Mother, but way more flexible, since it works with any non-creature spell and you can play it in decks that don't require Wart. Wart's very specific about like making tokens. So yeah, I think this card's very good. Very, very good. Well, let's move on to my favorite card from the set. And I don't even know if this card is good. I don't even really care if this card is good, because I just want to cast this card. And that card is Mirror Form. And Mirror Form is just such a ridiculously cool design. 6 mana instant in blue. Has very cool art. It says each non-land permanent you control becomes a copy of target non-aura permanent. So all of your non-lands, tokens, non-tokens, creatures, planeswalkers, all of them, you could choose any non-aura permanent on the battlefield at instant speed, and all of your things turn into that forever. So what do you do with this card? So my first thought is I love the Academy Manufacturer like trinket spew decks where you're just making all these tokens, and then you can cast something like Mirror Form, and you can turn all of your things into whatever, turn into a Panharmonicon and cast something and draw a ton of cards, or a turn all your things into Doubling Seasons and then make a token and you get an ungodly number of tokens. Like, just whatever the best thing is on the battlefield. But it's even at instant speed, which also turns this into like really weird Wrath protection, where your opponent goes to like Wrath the board and you can just cast your Mirror Form and turn all of your creatures into a non-creature permanent so it survives. It also might be the blue open the way, because you can make a bunch of these random tokens and then just like turn all of them into lands forever. So then all
non-land.
Of a sudden
non-land.
No, you can't turn them into lands.
Each non-land permanent turns into a non-aura.
Just
make sure
all your treasures and clues and stuff into
right.
a land. Yeah,
past its mana afterwards.
Your lands won't turn into the thing.
It's so high though.
Yeah, so I'm not saying any of this is good. I'm not saying any of this is good. It just is so fun and unique, though. So curious what you guys think of this one. I'm going to be jamming this in so many decks just because I think it's fun. But what do you guys think of Mirror Form?
If I'll put it in Lornis and try it. I'm not going to pay I don't know if it's even going to be.
Lornis just
right
has
now
like 20 clues by blinking.
Yeah, so I usually end up with a bunch of clues and then not the biggest things, but maybe the opponent has something cool, a dragon or something. And then the problem is you need to win immediately, because the board state will become unrepresentable unless you make like a stack with a number on it and say this one is this permanent, because they're all. So you only have to represent a tapped one. And I guess it's fine. Wow. I like the I dodge a raft by turning everything into a land.
It is funny.
Work from there, hopefully draw.
You know how many mesmeric orbs I can make with this?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you should win somehow.
I mean, anything with an attack trigger is kind of wild. Like, you turning everything into, like, Nyx Bloom Ancient or Badger Mole Cub, you're going to have more mana than you could ever. Like, there are ways you could actually probably win the game with this. I haven't really thought about it because I just want to cast it for fun. But I'm sure there are ways. Everything into Terror of the Peaks or something, and then you cast a creature and everyone dies. Like,
I'm glad that it's not just a permanent that, I'm glad it's just any permanent that you control. I think that's... That is the big thing
That is not a permanent. You can
becomes a copy of target non-aura permanent. Sorry,
right. Yes. Yeah, but not you.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. It could be any. It could be any permanent.
Yeah, not
any
just your permanent.
Your stuff can be anything, and
that's gotta be fun.
That's a gotta be
so cool. Gang.
I mean, it's a freebie for like Lonus decks. Like, if there is like a 4/4 on the battlefield, on anybody's battlefield, you're like, okay, all my clues are 4/4s now. You die.
Good game.
You don't have to worry about it.
Good games.
The applications are the fact that it's so flexible. Like, it doesn't have to just be a finisher. Like, Seth saying like, oh, all my creatures are gonna die anyway. I'm gonna turn them all into lands. Is hilarious to me, and it's instant speed, so it is you can hold it up.
I might
instant
not be
speed
willing.
Speed is cool. Yeah.
To leave up 5 mana Frank Shield, but I will definitely leave up 6 from your form.
Yeah.
You know those combo together, right?
Oh, they actually do. We might
they turn the ink
here.
Shields into lands, and they're like gods.
All right, back to the top of the order, Phil. What is your last pick from Lorwyn Eclipsed?
So this card also got spoiled before set release, obviously, but before spoiler season. And it is Formidable Speaker, 3 mana, so another 3-drop, but this time it's a 2/4. It also looks a lot like Jean-Emmanuel Depas. Wow, how come? So apparently he plays Lornis because this kind of wins the game almost on the spot with Lornis, I guess, in my deck. So when it enters, you may discard a card if you do search your library for a creature card and put it into your hand, so you 2/2 up a combo piece. And then this, for some reason, has another ability that says 1 mana untap target permanent, or another target permanent, which untaps Lornis and untaps mana. Why does it have the untap? I don't know. The ETB creature tutor is crazy. I don't know if we had a 3 mana ETB tutor creature that tutors any creature. I guess we have Fearsome Path.
I don't believe there is. I tried to look this up, and I don't think there's another creature that just lets you tutor any creature that's as cheap as this is.
I guess that's only
that's not a bad thing.
It's
I feel like that
common.
More often than not. That's
that
an
might
upside.
Even be an upside at points. And why does it untap my Lornis as well? It is so cool, but ooh la la, I need this. Good thing it's rare.
I think this card is good in Standard. I think this card
is good,
good
body
here.
Well. Yeah.
It's got a very good rate. I think it's good in Commander. It does everything. And the fact that it untaps another permanent, not just a like creature or something like that, this is huge. And we just slightly talked about it. I swear, more often than not, discarding a card to get anything from your deck, any creature from your deck, that's an upside. I feel like that's an upside.
Does Jean-Emmanuel play elves or something? It feels a little like, hey, I need something to get Craterhoof and then untap. My Marin or whatever.
No.
What's the...
Jean-Emmanuel Duprat plays the best deck.
What did he win with? Do you remember what he won Worlds with that year? I'm trying to think if this card connected to the deck he was playing at the time or not.
Was that Tron versus...
Let me see. Which Worlds is...
Worlds XXIX, so 29?
Okay.
I mean, it looks to me like it's a Survival of the Fittest reference, right? Maybe he just likes that card.
He played Esper Legends.
Survival of the Fittest is you discard a creature and then you put a creature into your hand.
It is kind of survival, like a one-shot survival. I mean, this card, This card, I think, might be the, like, broadest good card in the set. There's good cards that go in one deck, but I think this is just a card that you can play in so many different decks. It's probably at its best in Elf, since it is an Elf. It untaps Gaia's Cradle, untaps Nykthos, it tutors up your Crater Hoof or whatever you want. You can untap your big mana-producing Elves. So it seems really good there. As Krim mentioned, getting cards in your graveyard can be relevant if you're reanimating. Like, you tutor up something that can reanimate the thing you discarded. I think this is just any sort of combo. If you're doing any sort of like Kiki comboing, any creature-based combo, this is like the easiest way to find it. It can get your Walking Ballista to close out the game once you make infinite mana. I think this card's just absurd. Like, I think this card's just like over the top good. But yeah, it is a tutor though. Do you guys not play it? Like, are you going to play this card, I guess, is my question. Because I know we got a little bias against tutors. Like, is this something that you won't play because it's a tutor, even though it's good?
I don't play tutors, so, I mean, for me, like, I might play one, and that's, like, pushing it. That's, like, really going above and beyond. And, like, in the situation that I want an untapper, then okay. But if I'm doing this because I need a tutor, then I probably not going to play it. Yeah. But it is generically, I think it is, without my bias included into it, I think it is just a good card. So I would play it unless you also hate tutors, or unless for some reason you need an untapper. If you need an untapper, like if the tutor is the first reason I play it, I'm not playing it.
Yeah. I mean, like, just untapping like Solvala or any like mana dork that's like, I tap for a bajillion mana, like the new Brigid. That's like the backside of it is I tap for mana equal to the number of creatures I control. Like that plus this is like, oof.
I got it, Krim. I got it. You play this, you tutor up your spell stutter sprite, and then you counter all their things.
Yeah.
Man, it's not like I couldn't do that before with Fairy Harbinger.
That is true. That is true. All right, Krim, let's move back to you. What do you got for your last pick?
My last pick? Okay, this is hard because I feel like I want to talk a lot about this set, but the problem here is a lot of them are like kindred type. Like kindred type support, right? So I gotta show love to my Merfolk. and look, but it's not just a Merfolk card, okay? I picked the best Merfolk that isn't just a Merfolk deck thing. And I think for me, it's gotta be Adept Water Shaper. I really like this Merfolk. For those that don't know what Adept Water Shaper does, it's a 2 and a white. It's a 3/4 Merfolk cleric. Other tapped creatures you control have indestructible. Now, as you know, this is real nice with cards like Convoke, especially like a lot of the new Convoke stuff that's coming out, like Harmonizing Crescendo, things like that. But Convoke cards have existed across time, right? Whether it's War of Invention, yada, yada, yada. You can really then, at instant speed, protect all your stuff. And if you're playing things like vehicles or anything like that, you can then block and then crew, and then they're now all indestructible. There's just a lot of stuff you can do with Adept Water Shaper, and it's going to make it so that combat gets real tricky. And I'm not going to lie to you, if I see you with an Adept Water Shaper, it does get a little hairy and scary to swing into.
I mean, this card's so, it's so good. Like, you'd play it in basically any Merfolk deck that's in white. The only downside is a lot of Merfolk decks are mono blue, so like you got to be a Sig deck, I guess.
Until the new
Lorwyn Eclipse stuff. So it doesn't work with all the old Merfolk commanders. But great in Merfolk. My first thought was actually vehicle decks. I think if you're playing any sort of vehicle deck, the instant speed being able to tap your entire team is so good. So any vehicle deck, and also one of the sneaky benefactors of this set that I haven't heard anyone talk about. There's a lot of clerics. So many of these creatures split across the creature types have cleric as their second type. So if you got a cleric deck like Aura or something, this card's so good there too. So yeah, I love this card as well. I think you could you play in just generic mono white and just like, I don't know, like an alien deck or something. Like, is it good enough just to like, I'm playing white weenie style stuff. This protects my team.
Unfortunately,
you
can't like
tapped it out, but
I mean, it's not hard because you also have like so many ways to just convoke and tap things down, right? And yeah. I don't see Water Shaper caring about what type. And as long as it's just a tapped creature, that's good, right? And like a lot of token strategies, since you can't really partake in like blinking stuff out, you can only phase and whatnot. The other things you've got to lean into then is just the indestructible clause. And once you start getting in a bunch of indestructible for cheap, by the way, I think that's the big thing here. Yeah, you could like do some other big mana things, but this is a very cheap way to give all your stuff indestructible.
Yeah, you can also just attack with everything and then wipe. That is brutal.
Yep.
You can attack and you don't have to worry about your creatures dying in combat because they're indestructible. So it allows you to swing out. The only thing I would be scared about is if you are swinging out, then like if somebody like swords your adept in response and you're like very sad. But like, I guess if you're also like Selesnya elves or something that can like tap down fully, like a Convoke deck or something, which is what Merfolk are doing in this set, then it's really easy to keep indestructible.
Also kind of sneaky cute with clones too. If you get two of these, they can like give each other indestructible.
Yeah, then it gets real hard to deal
then
with.
You build your own Abyssin almost. Yeah. All right, Tomer, what do you got for your final pick of the episode?
All right, this is one that I think is going to be incredibly strong for blink decks. And maybe also other decks too. Morning Tide's Light. It's a 4-mana white sorcery, 3 and a white sorcery. Exile any number of target creatures. At the beginning of the next end step, return those cards to the battlefield tapped under their owner's control. Until your next turn, prevent all damage that would be dealt to you. Exile Morning Tide's Light. So, in a blink deck, you just blink all your creatures, right? You blink all your creatures. You got all those ETBs, leave the battlefield triggers again. Great time. But, like, look at the fog effect here. Until your next turn, prevent all damage that will be dealt to you. We know the One Ring. We know the One Ring's effect. We know Teferi's protection effect. We know what happens when we cast a spell. Yes, it's a sorcerer, so, like, oh, no, I have to wait. I don't know if my opponents will attack me. When you cast this, you're casting this, you know that people want to attack you. And what this actually does is it kind of reads, instead of you don't take damage, it's like your opponents will take damage instead, because people will be like, wow, I can't deal damage to Tomer. He casts Morning Tide's Light. I might as well full send at Krim. And so it actually does extra damage to your opponents somehow. The text is actually weird like that. It also can remove potential blockers from your opponents too. So if you're not blinking but you rather want to swing out, you can just like exile your opponent's blockers. They'll enter tapped too, so your opponents can also get in on the fun action too. And why would they why not swing at that person who has now tapped down creatures, because they can't hit you, you can't take damage. So I think this card just like plays very, very well, better than it looks. Very good in blink decks, but has some applications outside of that too.
I do like that it's exile any number of target creatures.
Yeah.
That's the interesting
That part's
part.
Nice. That part's nice.
All the tokens gone.
I'm glad it's sorcery, because if this was instant speed, it'd be like, oh my God. But
is this not just a good aggro card? Like, when I read this, because I've been thinking about this card because it's so, like, it's very unique. Like, it does a lot of familiar things, but being a sorcery and the way it works is very unique. When I read it, I think, like, yeah, you can blink out your own team for value, not take damage, let your opponents smash into each other, kind of like main phasing it to Teferi's Protection almost. So I just cast this, I'm going to nope out, you guys fight each other. But you can also, like, build a board and use this almost like in a Chroma's Will, where, like, I build a board, I'm just going to blink out all your blockers, and I'm just going to swing in and kill you, and I don't got to worry about the crackback because I can't be damaged next turn. So I'm free to swing with all of my creatures. So I think there's actually, like, an odd amount of flexibility here. Like, yeah, great in blink, but I think it might even be better than that.
I've never heard Seth be aggressive like this before.
I know.
This is so weird.
Someone else
in
will do this.
I thought you'd be like, someone could land. And I have to be the one, but basically, you can also attack with that. No, you were like,
I don't know what's happening. Yeah.
Whoa. I'm afraid.
But yeah, this card's great. It's very interesting.
I'll definitely be playing it. Especially in my humans deck, right? This is it for that aggro game plan you're talking about, Seth.
Yeah, get him. All right, let's go to our last pick. And you mentioned Panharmonicon, Stomer, and I can't help but end with a Panharmonicon. And this is a Panharmonicon Furry Animation, which I think is a Pandermonicon that we've never gotten before. Twilight Diviner. It's a 3-mana 3/3 black elf cleric. When it enters, you surveil two. Sure, whatever, low graveyard value. The big ability, though, is whenever one or more other creatures you control enter, if they enter or were cast from a graveyard, create a token that's a copy of one of them. So this essentially just doubles your reanimation. For three
once
mana.
Each turn.
Once each, it is a once per turn restriction, but you do your Entomb reanimate stuff and you get two copies of your big finisher that you reanimate. You do a living death and you get one of the things you reanimate, an extra copy of, but you get everything and you get a bonus copy of the best thing that you got back. I feel like this is just a great card for any sort of like reanimatory style commander, like the Terra from Final Fantasy that reanimates things with power 3 or less, so good in a deck like that, or Marina Clannel Toth, or Temna, anything that's doing graveyard shenanigans, Madrotha. This seems like just an auto include there because you get so much value out of it and it's only 3 mana. But what do you guys think of a reanimate Pandermonicon? Is this card actually good?
It's gotta be, right?
It's gotta be.
So it is a cleric, and clerics have this theme of reanimating small stuff every turn.
Yep.
So I think it's better. Like, if you Entomb reanimate something big, it should be enough.
That's absolutely.
Win more, yeah. Phil. Win more with me.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to play a 3-drop before this, because Entomb reanimate is 2 mana. But I think for decks that get like incremental little... There was another one. There's a lot of commanders now that say, like, I reanimate a 2-drop every turn or something. Mm-hmm. And then you get little grave crawlers and stuff out of there. Wait, grave crawler?
That yeah.
Doubles. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Grave
stuff like this.
Doubles.
I think
they get
this
two
one.
Of them.
It's got to be good, right? It feels so cool. There's... And we have not seen this before.
So it also works really well with like Persist, right? Like, because you don't have to like literally reanimate.
Yeah.
You can just have like something die and come back with like Unearth or Persist. So like there's that new Orzhov another really great card, but it's a new Transform Orzhov card that's
the
on the backside. It gives all, the god. It gives on
Erdu.
The backside, it gives all your things, Erdo. It gives
Erdu,
all your creatures.
Erdu.
Yeah, it gives them persist. So, like, imagine you're playing, like, a aristocrat's deck with Erdu or Erdu, and you, like, you sacrifice something on your turn. It comes back with persist. You get a token copy of it. The next turn, or your opponent's turn, you still have your sacrifice out, like, a Viserysir or whatever. You sacrifice another creature. It comes back. You get another copy. It's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. So good. The value.
Endless value engine.
This
it does work
insane.
Once each turn. So you can do it on your opponent's turn as well if you have something entering during your opponent's turn. Yeah. I mean, the card just seems great in graveyard decks. I like it. And I like my Pandermonicon. So anyway, I think those are our top cards from Lorwyn Eclipsed. There's so many more. We could have done 2 podcasts on this. We had a very long list this time around because the set's so awesome. But let us know what your favorite cards from the set are. What are you hyped to play with? And we'll get to see some of these cards very soon on Commander Clash. So keep an eye out for that as well. Anyway, thanks for watching, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed it. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a spectacular week. And this is the crew signing out.